Imagine being told that you won't survive without a new heart, or you won't ever see again without new corneas. Imagine knowing that your entire future depends on somebody else donating those organs, but that the chance of that actually happening is extremely slim. That is the reality for thousands of South Africans who find themselves living suspended lives, waiting for an organ that might never come. Around 4,000 people are on the waiting list at any time. Yet less than 1% of South Africans have registered as potential donors. If it was you or your loved one, wouldn't you do anything you could to change those odds? Welcome to A Gift of Life, a podcast series that examines the subject of organ donation in South Africa and asks what we can do to improve the chance of a second chance for those patients. I'm your host, Pippa Hudson, and over the course of this series, I'll be sharing stories of organ and tissue recipients, donors and their families, as well as the doctors, transplant coordinators and other professionals who help turn one family's tragedy into another family's greatest hope. I hope we'll address many of your questions around organ and tissue donation and perhaps inspire you to sign up as a donor yourself. Up until now, we've kept our focus quite broadly on the subject of solid organ donation. Today, though, I want to zoom in on the topic of tissue donation in more detail. I think most people know you can donate your major organs after death, your heart, your lungs, your kidneys. But how many know that your skin, your bone, even your eye tissue can completely transform someone else's life or indeed save it? Or that some of those donations can be made while you're still alive? You don't need to take my word for it, because we are really privileged to have right here in the Western Cape one of the most advanced state-of-the-art tissue banks in the country and indeed on the African continent. It's called Vita Nova, and it opened in Blue Downs in 2021. It's already had a significant impact on this region's ability to offer cornea transplants as well as bone grafts and life-saving burn treatment. It's a pleasure to welcome to the podcast Sandra Fenter, who is the Donor Recovery and Awareness Manager at Vita Nova, as well as being the president of the South African Tissue Bank Association. Sandra, before we talk about your facility, let's just get some basics out the way around what tissue donation itself actually involves, because I think a lot of people aren't really that aware of it, or certainly not as much as they're aware of organ donation. What is different about tissue donation?
Yes, and I think, thank you, Pippa. That's the point to start at. What's the difference from organ donation? So the critical point in organ donation is that the patient has been declared brainstem dead and is in ICU on a heart lung machine. In that case, organs can be donated. But, you know, such a small percentage of people die in those particular circumstances. Most of us die on the road, at home, at work, wherever it may be, where there isn't a ventilator, we don't get that kind of treatment. You know, there's cardiac death. And for those people, organ donation isn't possible, but tissue donation still is an option. And we reckon that about 80% of everybody who die can potentially be tissue donor. And with tissue, we only talk about four different types. Firstly, there's corneal donation, you know, the thin, clear, see-through layer that covers the iris part of the eye that lets the light into our eye. If that is damaged, we can't fix it. It's almost like a window. Once it's broken or cracked, we can't paste something over or whatever. You know, there's forever that obscure vision. So we can only replace it. And in South Africa, the need for corneal donation is very big. We need about 2,000 corneas a year, just in certain regions. You know, I want to say the more urban areas. But we don't really know nationally how big the need really is. But locally, we only procure about 50 corneas. We've seen a drastic decline in corneal donation numbers since the early 2000s. But we are now, as a community of tissue banks, putting measures in place and trying, you know, to look at ways how we can improve the situation. Because cornea donation and transplant can literally mean the difference between being able to see and blindness. Excuse me. Yeah, so it's vital. It's a critical service that people need.
Why has there been such a drop-off since the 2000s? Do you know?
Yeah, you know, I think there's various factors, but there was a problem with legislation. There was a great improvement in legislation in 2012, okay. which required for the first time written informed consent from next of kin, rather than the consent that a state pathologist would be able to give in a government mortuary for the procurement of corneas. So it was very good for the public because it protects us, right, that new legislation. But the immediate impact was that less corneas were procured because now we have to first talk to a donor family before we can access those corneas. And of course, because the cornea has to be recovered within 12 hours or 18 hours of death, it makes that window very small. Mm. Firstly, to locate the family in that time, have the conversation, give them an opportunity to think about it, make a decision, putting it on paper, getting the cornea out.
A
lot of work that has to be done in that time. But there's been lots of development. We're looking now at international standards where with a few tweaks in different methods, one can push the procurement time up to 24 hours and in some cases maybe even 30 hours. In Germany, they have special measures where they procure corneas up to 72 hours after death. But they have huge numbers of donors, you know, and they can be far more selective than what we can.
Okay.
So we're looking at the moment at 24 hours and we're hoping to start seeing an improvement in the numbers, hopefully early next year.
Okay. So that's the cornea. What are four,
that's
you
cornea.
Said, types of tissue that can
yes.
be donated? What are the other
yes.
three?
So heart valves is another one. Heart valve donation, we procure the entire heart, and we only have one heart valve bank in South Africa. They sit in Bloemfontein with the University of the Free State, the Homograph Bank. And heart valves are used for implant. Many people suffer all sorts of, from children that have deformities, you know, born with a deformed heart valve and they need implants. You do get synthetic heart valves as well, but we understand, like with all the other tissues, that the actual human tissue is the best thing. And, and critical here is that with children who still grow, all those arteries in the heart and everything is still growing. So if you give them a synthetic heart valve, it doesn't grow with the body, obviously.
And so you'd have to replace it again.
Surgery, yes. Whereas if you can give a young person a young valve that still has the potential to grow with the body, of course, that makes a lifetime of difference. So heart valves is the one. Also, I'm not 100% sure on how big the need is for heart valves, but the donation rate for that is also low. Obviously, something that impacts on that is the fact that in South Africa, we have very high non-natural death rates due to things like violence, vehicle accidents, and so on. And ideally, you want the young heart valve. So yes, a lot of young people die violent deaths, but now they need a post-mortem examination. And in most cases, then the heart valves get destroyed during that examination, you know, and that's not always an option then to donate it anymore. So that's the heart valves. The one tissue that for me personally is really amazing is skin. Skin donation is fairly new in South Africa, only since about 2014 we've started doing that. And we ultimately use skin for the treatment of burn wounds. So anyone can donate skin. Yes, there's also the same type of selection criteria as with everything else. You know, it has to be a healthy individual and so on. But we can do it from quite young till right up to the age of 80 years or so. And with skin, we only procure the very top layer of skin from the limbs, the arms and the legs, and the back of the donor. And so it's not invasive. It's not so deep that there's any bleeding or anything like that. It looks like a serious sunburn, you know, once that is complete. And we use a very fancy instrument called a dermatome that literally shaves off just that very top layer. The beauty of skin is then we process it in the laboratory and then it goes to burn facilities. And most of the people that we help is children.
Yeah.
In South Africa, they say we have around about 270 serious burns every month, of which half are children, yeah. You know. And in winter, we have the fires up in Gauteng, and in summer, we have the fires down here. And then we have shack fires during winter all over. So children are
at high risk,
the real victims, you know. So the beauty with skin is we don't actually transplant it. We use it almost like it's a treatment. So it's almost like a bandage. Mm. So the donor skin is placed on the burn wound and can be left there for 2 weeks. During that time, the patient's own body, you know, starts to calm down from the shock that it had and start generating new cells from underneath. And after about 2 weeks, the skin dries out, it comes loose, and then underneath it, you have beautiful pink new skin growing. So, and then it's removed, you know, that the dry skin is removed and discarded. But the benefit that that brings is if the patient was treated with synthetic products, synthetic bandages and so on, those wounds have to be cleaned daily to prevent infection.
Which is painful, isn't it?
Painful. Yeah. It's a terrible thing that those poor people go through. And every time they're traumatized and every time you peel off, you know, when you have a bleeding something and you pull off the bandage, some of the new growth comes off with it.
Yes.
So it's a much longer process. The scarring is worse. The pain is worse. So we find that with donated skin, the hospital stay, number one, is shorter, scarring is less, and the healing process is quicker and not so traumatic. Mm. Because you can leave it on now for 2 weeks, there can be proper healing without interference.
Amazing.
So, and that literally save lives, you know, because when we burn and skin, a huge portion of skin is removed, like 60% of the body, the patient really has the risk of infection, septicemia,
yeah,
and dehydration, because that's the job of our skin, right?
Yes.
Is to keep the moisture in and the bugs out. Mm. Now, if the skin is gone, the bugs are in and the moisture
water's
is out.
Yeah.
So if we can, the sooner we can correct that situation, the bigger the chance for survival. So that's an absolute lifesaver.
Just miraculous,
isn't it?
Yeah.
Especially in South Africa, you know.
Absolutely. Now, Sandra, the fourth kind of tissue that can be donated is bone tissue. And I mean, again, this is just the most fascinating developments happening in this field about what can be done and the constituent of bone tissue and how that can be used. Won't you tell us a bit more?
Yes. So I think most people are unaware of bone tissue. You know, time and time again, we find people being surprised when we say. But yes, with bone, we actually refer to musculoskeletal tissue. That's the fancy word for the white, strong, long bones that are in our arms and legs, in the limbs, those long bones. So we literally refer to the humerus, the ulna and the radius, the femur, tibia and fibula, those long bones. They all come out whole. Important to know, you know, when people hear the limbs, they think, oh, amputation, you know, is my body going to be dismembered and things? And it's not like that at all. It's a simple surgical procedure where we make one single incision in the length of the limb, remove the bone itself, and then we have an artificial or a prosthetic device that we put back in the place of the bone. And then it's closed up neatly with stitches again.
So that will hold you that know, structure.
It holds the structure. Yeah. It provides dignity to the donor body. Obviously, someone else still has to handle that body because there's still a funeral and cremation to follow. The donor can get his clothing back on. You know, it's not something visible that anyone's going to see or is going to upset anyone. Mm-hmm. And importantly, you know, it's done with the greatest of respect and the donor's body is intact, which is very important. With that, of course, we also procure some tendons. Tendons are used very often in sports injuries and to fix all sorts of joints, knees and shoulders and so on that needs fixing. And then the bone tissue itself, in our laboratories, once again, we prepare it in various applications. I think there's about over 120 different ways in which the bone can be applied, depending on the patient's need. So we work very closely. We have a team of excellent specialists who work with orthopedic surgeons, maxillofacial surgeons, to continuously know what is needed. How can we maybe develop something new that will assist patients? So, yeah, so that we do on a daily basis. Mm. And the need for bone is incredibly big. In South Africa, we supply throughout the country together with the tissue bank in Pretoria in the region of about 25,000 allografts a year. Gosh. You know, so that is a lot, and it's a lot of people are affected by it. So you can see the need is there. And that's why we need. We need donors. We need people to be aware of the option of donation.
I mean, Sandra, what you're talking about, it's incredibly cutting-edge science. It's moving forward all the time. The applications grow. The refinement of the techniques grow. But always at the core, you're talking with immense respect and dignity and acknowledgement of this gift that a donor has chosen to make. And having visited your facility in Blue Downs, I've seen that in all of your staff. There's a huge sense throughout that unit of respect and gratitude for this gift. How do your staff deal with that? I mean, they've got that immense respect, but at the same time, they're working in a space where on a daily basis, they are confronted with death and trauma to some degree. Mm. Is it something you have to help support them to deal with?
Yes, absolutely. And you see, we have different levels of interaction with people. Firstly, right on the front line is our coordinators. They are the ones that, and we have two of them actually working at the forensic services at our two biggest facilities in the city, at Tigerberg Forensic Department as well as Salt River. And they are interacting with potential donor families on a daily basis. Mm. As the family comes in for the identification process, which is required by law, we are then able to approach them in a very gentle and sensitive, kind manner to introduce them to the topic of donation and to make that vital request, whether they will donate. So that in itself is quite a difficult thing to maneuver, you know.
It must take a very special person to do that job.
Yeah, yeah. You know, you must be sure of yourself and really believe in what you do to start with. And then, you know, it's quite possible that you get 10 people in a row that says, no, I don't want to do this. And you have to keep on trying and motivating yourself and so on. And of course, they hear the stories of what happened. Yeah. Many people open up to them and will tell the whole story of everything that happened with this person, why he became depressed and how they tried to help and, you know, what all happened in this life before it ended and when it ended. So they hear that, they absorb that, and often they ask for advice and they have to give comfort. The same for the coordinators who work with the funeral homes. Often their encounters are telephonic, but it's the same kind of thing. So over and over they're exposed to, I almost want to say, secondary trauma. They hear it again and again. And then our recovery technicians, those guys who procure the tissue itself, of course, for them it's dramatic because they see the donor body. And I mean, it's not a natural thing we do, you know, to be working on the body of a deceased donor. So that in itself, they see the injuries, they see the gunshots, they see the evidence of violence that sometimes happened with donor families. So, and then our technicians in the laboratory, they work with the tissue and realizing this is not just wood or animal material. This is actually somebody whose tissue I'm working with.
Yeah.
So we do provide for them a counseling service. We've developed over time in the last 2 years a very good relationship with our counselor who comes 4 times a year and do group sessions. And then, of course, they are free at the company's cost also at any time to make contact if they need that kind of support and so on.
That's fantastic.
And then as a team, because we all work off-site, you know, we meet every second Monday just for a debrief and to see how everyone is doing. Mm-hmm. And I think that it pays off at the end when people feel that they are cared for, they cope better. And then, of course, that fizzles all the way down to the next of kin again. If we are not emotionally in a good place ourselves, it's not possible to support anyone else. So it's very important for us that we look after their emotional well-being.
The last time I visited your facility, Sandra, you had the most beautiful project that had begun already, but I'm sure in the last 2 years it's grown immensely, and that was your remembrance wall recognizing donors. For most of our listeners to this podcast won't have been to your facility. Won't you tell them what that looks like and what you do?
Yes. So right at the entrance of the tissue bank, Papa, and there was reason to put it right there. It's pretty. There's a pretty lounge area with it. We put it right at the entrance, right at the heart, because off to the left is the admin block, off to the right is the lab, front is the training center. We put it right in the heart of the tissue bank because that's what it is about. And we want everyone entering in there to be reminded. We want our employees to be reminded daily what they work with. But yes, it's a beautiful stainless steel wall with round cut circles where we engrave the names of our donors with their date of death. And as every month, we have our own little ritual at the beginning of new month to put in the names of all the donors of the previous month into the wall. So it just becomes a permanent reminder of that gift of life. But without intending it to be like that, what has happened now, because we also, of course, write a thank you letter at the end of the month to say thank you to donor families. And in there we mention that the name has now been put on the wall. Just for those that are concerned about the Poppy Act, we actually ask in our consent form if we can put your name on the wall. And we have so many people making contact and say, can we come and see the wall?
Oh, wow.
And they do that on appointment, and it's awesome to see. It's heartbreaking because we've discovered that for some people, this has become the only place where they have a remembrance. Many people, or in the past, we all used to visit a grave site. People don't really do that much anymore. And we all used to have a memorial wall at church or somewhere. But for many people, that doesn't happen.
Yeah.
And so they will come and just have tea, you know, and they take photographs and they bring children and grandchildren. Something beautiful happened on Father's Day. Mm. We actually had a call on the Friday from a mom who said, on Sunday, it's the anniversary of his death and it's Father's Day. Can I bring the kids?
Oh.
And that was really special, you know, for them to have that time to see Dad's name on the wall and to know that, yes, he's not here, but he's made a fantastic change and difference in other lives. And that's what we want to remember with that.
It's incredibly special.
Yeah.
Sandra, other lives and potentially so many other lives. I mean, that is the beauty. When we talk about organ donation, you can save seven lives and it's a huge thing to do. The numbers are much bigger for tissue donation, aren't they?
Yeah. No, it is. And so our need is so much bigger. So whereas we may say we need, I don't know what the numbers are, but let's say we need 50 organ donors a year in South Africa. I want to say we need 300-400 tissue donors a year in South Africa to meet the demand of all those different tissues. And it sounds horrible to say to meet the demand, but at the end of the day, if we don't work with numbers, it's too abstract. You know, it has to become concrete so that we know what we're working towards.
Yeah.
And that's why awareness is so important for us, that the public know and understand what tissue donation is all about.
One donor can literally help dozens of people, not
absolutely. We say 65 or more.
Wow.
So, and of course it's different depending on what is donated, depending on what the patient need is, but round about 65 people.
We've been talking always here about deceased victims. Is it possible to be a living tissue donor, Sandra?
Yes. So there's only one tissue we can donate while we're alive, and that is a femoral head that we can donate at the time of hip replacement. you know, so many of our aunties and uncles, you know, we're also getting older. I hope we don't go there, but need a hip replacement eventually. Now, that femoral head that is removed during a hip replacement, it's not excellent bone. It's not great quality, but the structure is still there. And there's parts of it that's still very useful. And because we are running low on the deceased donor numbers, we use whatever bone we can salvage from that femoral head, you know, to supplement the deceased donor bone.
Right.
So it's a very simple process. Once again, there has to be consent, engagement with the patient, but it doesn't cost him anything. This is a piece of bone that traditionally would be thrown in the red bin, you know, medical waste at the hospital. But now we, you know, we capture that, we do consent with the patient, and then once it gets to the lab again, we clean it off of all the cortical bone and the cartilage and so on. It gets washed through. One can see what is there to work with. And it's amazing what difference even that can make.
So please, if you're scheduled for a hip replacement, ask your surgeon what's going to happen to that femoral head. It's so important.
Absolutely.
I mean, Sandra, in terms of awareness, your very existence in the heart of Cape Town has been a huge step forward. And the work you continue to do, letting people know about this process, like we're doing today through this podcast, is so important. What has it meant to Cape Town to have Vita Nova? It's 2 years now. What sort of impact have you had in terms of the number of tissue donations happening, the applications and advancement of technology? Mm. What difference do you feel like you've made?
That's a big question, and I don't know what the short answer is. There's a few points I'll quickly touch on. But I think in terms of the community, the most amazing difference that I see is that everybody is starting to donate. So what does that mean? Traditionally, I want to say in the last 20 years of tissue banking in South Africa, by far the majority, I want to say almost exclusively, our donors were white, middle-aged people.
Interesting.
Okay. Right. And I think that's the group that we were targeting because, you know, I don't know, it was maybe just convenient and easy. But since we're in Cape Town, and I think in particular, the fact that we're collaborating so successfully with the Western Cape Forensic Pathology Services in actually having coordinators on site at forensics, we are now for the first time engaging with people of all walks of life. It's now not just an exclusive community. And we're finding more and more that people are not opposed to donation. They just don't know about it. They just know too little. But as soon as there's understanding of what benefits it can bring, people are actually willing to donate. And so we've seen now in Cape Town that 70% of our donors are now people of color.
That's fantastic.
Whereas previously, you know, it was just about exclusively white, which is fantastic because we cannot, the sums will just not make up if we have to rely on that little pool to supply everybody with tissue. So we're seeing a fantastical shift. And then also the majority of our donors, I think, I forget the number exactly now, but it was something like 60% of them are under the age of 50 years old.
Gosh.
Which means, you know, it's terrible that so many young people die in our city and mostly violent deaths.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I recall the words of one mom. Her son was a gang member and a drug abuser. And she said to one of our coordinators, you know, had he stayed, he would have caused more havoc in our lives. But now that he's gone, he's able to help others in need. And that was awesome, that yes, even though it's young people who die, they can help someone else. And it doesn't make it better, of course. It's not easier. But there can be some consolation that at least now a life that many parents feel, where was it going, can actually
have meaning.
Have meaning. And that's awesome, yeah. The other thing that we're seeing also, if we put the tissue donor numbers of what's happening now in Cape Town and happening in Pretoria, because, you know, that's the only other tissue bank. Now that there's two, in the last 2 years where we've had a consistent decline in numbers, for the first time last year, the graph started going up again.
Fantastic.
So, and that to me is crucial. For me also, once again, personally, one of the greatest benefits of the establishment of Vita Nova is that we get to train and develop a whole new group of people in this specific sector that's never worked in it before. At Vita Nova, we now have 21 people working there, of which only three had any experience in tissue banking before.
Gosh.
So it's a whole bunch of people. I want to say we just about doubled the capacity of people who enable and facilitate donation. And the more feet we can get on the ground, spread the word, be there where it matters, the more people will become aware and donation will increase. So I think nationally, Vita Nova has made a difference merely by the footprint, the amount of people that is now in the field.
Out there spreading the word. Sandra, in our previous episodes when we've spoken about organ donation, we've emphasized that as much as it's wonderful for you to proactively register as a potential organ donor, you can do the same as a tissue donor, also through the Organ Donor Foundation. But at the end of the day, it's your family who are asked to give permission and sign off on tissue donation as well as organ donation.
Yes.
So, I mean, what message to listeners about having that conversation? It's all well and good for me to say, I've registered, I've got the stickers in my ID book, please, please use whatever you can. If somebody in my family doesn't know that, it's no use at all.
And that's exactly the problem. That's exactly the problem. We need to make sure that everyone around us know about our decisions, because we won't be here to stay. And unfortunately, even though we register, we don't have a system where there's a red flag or a whistle or a bell going off when somebody dies. So unless the family take the step of saying, we know that so-and-so wanted to be a donor, he has passed away now, can we get the process going? Unless people do that, nothing will happen. We try our best to educate and do information sessions at hospitals with forensic services, with police, with emergency services and so on to help facilitate that process. But it's a difficult topic for anyone to talk about if you're not trained in it. So the ultimate and the best way, and what we're working towards at the end of the day, is that people will contact us and say, so-and-so has passed away, we would love to donate. That's the ultimate. We really find that people are willing to donate, but still, too often, when death comes, the answer is, we don't know what he would have liked to do. Mm. We're not sure that this is the right thing. And then it's often easier to say, let's rather not.
Yeah.
You know, and that's why it's so important that we talk.
So this talk, I think, has been a huge help, Sandra, and you've done such a great job of enlightening us on what tissue donation unlocks in terms of possibility. Mm. My final question to you is really, where to from here? I know amongst your plans for the future, you're working on a special project at Greater Scare Hospital. Won't you tell us a bit more?
Yes. So Vita Nova Bone SA, we have big dreams. We really want to change the sector for the better. We want to enable donation in every province, I want to say in every big city, and even further afield. We are sending a small little team for international training later this year, which we're very glad about, because, you know, in South Africa, there are no real training opportunities. There's no academic qualification in this country for people who want to qualify themselves in our field, including organ donation. Mm. So we're glad that we're at a point where we can start looking at international training. But then very excited, yes, we work in very close collaboration with Groote Schuur Hospital. And it's still a very new project, and we hope to make a big reveal somewhere down the line, maybe 6 months from now. But we are collaborating on the establishment of a bereavement center in the hospital that will help to facilitate the conversation between doctors, nursing staff, and families at the end of life of patients. It's a very sensitive and difficult thing. And unfortunately, the hospital environment doesn't at the moment provide an ideal situation or even a room or a sit down where we can just talk about what's happened. So the bereavement center intend to fix that problem and to help people going through this difficult time in a more dignified manner. But much more about that to come soon.
Look forward
to
that follow-up conversation in the future. Sandra, thank you so much. It's been so enlightening, and you've done such a wonderful job of explaining in layman's terms the processes, the applications. I hope this conversation inspires more of our listeners to consider signing up and having that conversation with their families. Won't you just remind us in closing, if somebody is listening to this going, I want to make sure my family knows that I want to be a tissue donor, where do they register? What do they need to do?
First thing, Organ Donor Foundation. It's the same platform we use for all registration, organ and tissue donation. And important to know, at the time of death, the family has the option to say what is it that they want to donate. So we don't have to be worried, I don't want to donate everything, I only want to be some parts of it. At the time, between the medical assessment and the family, there's a discussion of what exactly will be donated. But we all register on the same platform with the Organ Donor Foundation, www.odf.org.za. The VitaNova website also facilitates donation at that same platform, vitanova.org.za. And again, talk to your family. Make sure kids, mothers, grandparents, grandchildren, friends know what our decisions are about donation.
Thank you for listening to this episode of A Gift of Life. Please check out our website, capetalk.co.za, to follow the series in full and make sure you don't miss an episode. And I'd really like to encourage you to share these episodes with your own family and friends. Help start the conversation about organ donation in your circles of influence. If you'd like to register as a donor, please visit the Organ Donor Foundation on www.odf.org.za. It's a quick, easy, and free process, and it could save 7 lives.